You're listening to KJZZ's Here and Now in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. The electric guitar has played a major role in how music has changed over the decades. That was Les Paul, Carlos Santana, and Eddie Van Halen. Longtime music journalist Alan DiPerna has written about the instrument and those who've used it as part of music's evolution in his new book, Play It Loud, An Epic History of the Sound, Style, and Revolution of the Electric Guitar. And he'll be at Changing Hands Bookstore in Phoenix on Friday night at 7 to talk about it. In the meantime, he's here with me. Alan, you used 12 guitars as a framing device to tell the story. How challenging was it to break the instrument down that way?
You know, some of them were very obvious, such as the Roe Patton A25 frying pan, the first commercially produced electric, Les Paul's stuff, the Fender Telecaster. In some cases, we had to not hedge our bets, but we knew that we had to cover both the, you know, two iconic Fender instruments at least, the Telecaster and the Stratocaster. Mm-hmm. So, okay, the Stratocaster is Jimi Hendrix's Stratocaster. So worked in a little bit of celebrity players, too. Also the final chapter, Jack White's Montgomery Ward Airline.
Yeah. Now, these are people who've had huge impacts. I mean, the people that you're writing about, the Beatles, you're writing about Jimi Hendrix, you're writing about so many other people. How much of it is the guitar makes the man or the man makes the guitar and whatnot? I mean, how much of the popularity and iconic nature of these guitars came from who was playing them?
A lot of it did, actually. But the Gibson Les Paul was moderately successful when first introduced in 1952. It was phased out in 61. Mm-hmm. Wasn't selling anymore. Then in the late 60s, well, first Mike Bloomfield, who played with Bob Dylan, picked it up. Also played with the Paul Butterfield Blues Band, the Super Session Records with Al Kooper. Eric Clapton popularizes the guitar in his work with John Mayall. You know, the whole pantheon comes in here. You know, Jeff Beck played a Les Paul at some point. So people became fascinated with that guitar once again. So, yeah, that is very much an instance where people played it because the leading guitar instrumentalists of the day had adopted that instrument.
It's KJZZ's Here and Now. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix, talking with author Alan DiPerna. He's the co-author of the new book, Play It Loud. We're talking about the history of the electric guitar. And you can see Alan at Changing Hands Bookstore coming up this Friday night. Alan, let's talk about Jimi Hendrix, because for a lot of people, he was the one that people were just stunned by what he did. And I think it was Jeff Beck, a quote in the book, that has something about how even if he hadn't played it well, he was playing it just in such a way people had never seen, but he was playing it well. Where do you put the impact of Hendrix when it comes to the electric guitar?
The impact of Hendrix is really huge, because he was the first player to put together a lot of different things. He was coming off the Chitlin circuit in the American South. He had really mastered the art of rhythm and blues and the blues. He had backed Little Richard, as some people know. So from that, not only did he get the whole R&B idiom, the whole African American musical expression of that period, but backing a guy like Little Richard, you learn how to put on a show. Right. So he had this excellent sense of showmanship, but he was also paying close attention to what was going on in England, even before he arrived in England in late 66. I found a passage somewhere where Hendrix tells Mike Bloomfield when they're in New York together, he says, boy, I'm listening to this Yardbirds material with Jeff Beck, and I really like what he's doing. He was paying a lot of attention to Pete Townsend of The Who. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of the first things he wanted to do when he arrived in London is go and meet Pete Townsend. and his manager was Chas Chandler, who had played in The Animals. So it was easy to arrange a meeting. They go over to, I think it was IBC Studios in London. And the first question, you know, Pete told me, actually Hendrix was too shy to talk. So Chas Chandler said, he wants to know what kind of amps you use. And, you know, and Townsend would tell him, well, I use Marshall amplifiers when I'm switching to Sound City. And Chandler said, good, he'll have one of both. So Hendrix was able to synthesize this British thing with the African-American blues thing. He put on a great show, incredibly handsome guy, a great songwriter, a great singer. I mean, you know, that's another big part of it. As brilliant as a guy like Jeff Beck is, he recorded a few vocal tracks at the prompting of his manager, but he was never that kind of front man that Hendrix was. In fact, a lot of the great players, even Townsend, in a way, you could say, was a sideman to Roger Daltrey.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing that strikes me is you have Steve Vai in the book, Joe Satriani, I think, of as well in recent years, someone who's known for playing a certain style, but not being able to accentuate it necessarily with the vocals to go with it. I mean, we think of Hendrix and Clapton. I even think of Stevie Ray Vaughan as someone else who was a great guitar player, but we also know their voices. They're very distinctive. Do you think in any way that takes away from the power of what they did with the instrument?
No, not at all. I think in a way it becomes, and this goes back to blues tradition, you know, B.B. King and even earlier, in a way it becomes this kind of dialogue between the guitar and voice, you know. The singer sings a line and the guitar responds to that line in some way, either accentuating what the singer has said or offering another, you know, it's all wordless, but you know, just bringing another dimension to the vocal. So, yeah, I think when you have an extraordinary player such as the ones you mentioned, that ability to have the vocals and the guitar coming from the same source, or even you take a guy like George Benson who would sing along with his guitar solos, it's all the more richer. So, no, I don't think it detracts at all.
So a recent Nobel Prize winner who got a lot of accolades, some people thought it was controversial, is Bob Dylan. Now, of course, I think people who know music history at all will think about Dylan Goes Electric, oh my gosh, and the impact that had. How important was that, do you think, as far as the evolution of the electric guitar?
I think that was hugely important. This one chapter in the book where I kind of plot the emergence of the 60s guitar hero in terms of three really significant festivals: Newport Folk Festival in 1965, mm-hmm. Monterey Pop in 1967, and of course Woodstock in 1969. So 65, Dylan going electric was huge. I don't know the extent that people realize today, but you know, the folk community was very dedicated to playing traditional instruments. They viewed the electric guitar, in the words of the folk singer Oscar Brandt, as a tool of capitalism. This was pop music. This was evil, crass, mass culture. It was something that the folkies really, you know, detested in a way. By 65, Dylan had, this was his third appearance at Newport. He had established himself as the king of the folkies, as this emergent new talent. So here he comes with a leather jacket, I believe a polka-dotted Mod shirt, if I recall, and an electric guitar around his neck, a Fender Stratocaster. He's backed by the Paul Butterfield Blues Band, well, members thereof, and, you know, Al Cooper on organ. This loud onslaught, you know, to the folk audience. It was really, you know, it was a shock to them. But there was, on the other hand, what it did was there was this whole other audience of young kids who had really, and I was one of them, young kids who had really been excited about the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and all of that. They suddenly merge, and there were elements of the folk audience who were more than willing to go with Bob Dylan in his new direction. You know, they could recognize his genius, and, you know, and they trusted him enough to say, hey, if this is where you want to be right now, we're down with that. So you get this merging of teenage, adolescent enthusiasm with the more kind of reflective intellectual aspect of the folk audience. Mm-hmm. They're politicized college students. Their habit of listening is to really key in to the lyric, what's being said. You know, it's not necessarily dance music for them. Out of that convergence, I would argue, comes what was known as the counterculture, the whole hippie thing. You know, there's this kind of combination of rebellious youth with this kind of, well, we're thinking about the world, we're thinking about politics, we're thinking about the race, civil rights, the environment.
And that brings you to one of the major themes of the book, which has to do with populism.
Largely because of the British invaders, the Beatles and Stones, everybody started to play guitar. Mm-hmm. a lot of people. Mm-hmm. In the earlier days of the instrument, in the 30s and the 40s, guitars were mainly marketed to and purchased by professional guitar players, musicians. With the British invasion, all of a sudden every kid wants some kind of guitar. The sales of the instrument go through the ceiling. Rickenbacker guitars, who make the brand that, you know, that the Beatles were famous for playing, had to add a whole new building to accommodate the additional demand. So everybody feels, a lot of people in our culture feel, you know, like they belong to the electric guitar, or there's a sense of ownership. I was talking to a guy from Forbes, and he said, well, why is it that everybody kind of has a sense that Jimi Hendrix played a Stratocaster, a Fender Stratocaster, yeah, and that Eric Clapton played a Les Paul, but then he switched to a, you know. Why do people have this knowledge when, if you ask them, you know, what kind of violin did Heifetz play, or, you know, what kind of piano did Vladimir Horowitz play, or whatever,
yeah.
There isn't that level of engagement of knowledge, and the very simple reason is that almost everybody has a guitar sitting in the corner in the bedroom somewhere. You know, some people didn't go very far with it. Others are playing in bars and everything all around the community. So it really is this great, you know, this great kind of populist instrument.
Alan DiPerna, we've been talking about the history of the electric guitar. He is the co-author of Play It Loud, and you can see him at Changing Hands Bookstore coming up this Friday night. Alan, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.